I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a whole lot of rage in the world right now. You know, I think the illusion of our separateness is highly distorted in the political debates that have been going on. And I find myself being in these heated discussions with dear friends of many years. But all of a sudden, I'm seeing them very differently. And we're in conversations that seem to have us be more and more separate. And the nature of the relationship is in question because of what we strongly believe in. And it's created tremendous tension. And I see that in many parts and with many people that are trying to work with what's being re-stimulated from the political tension in the world and from the wars in the world and from the distress that's all around us. But how we respond to anything is how we respond to everything. And what I know in the work that I do is that a lot of what we see and how we are reacting and responding to the world is much older than the situations that we find ourselves in, especially when it comes to intense emotions like anger and rage. Trauma gives birth to rage, but it's not the traumas themselves. It's the way in which our traumatic experiences were responded to early on in our lives. And for some reason, that holds a particular construction and constriction in our bodies that get lodged, and then we forget about the stories oftentimes that they represent, but our bodies don't forget, and they keep responding in the world when similar stimulation is, or traumas or triggers are present. So when I'm in the debate with my friend around whether it's Obama or Hillary, my white woman friend who I've been friends with for 25 years, and we've been able to talk about our children and our grandchildren and our losses and our gains and everything, all of a sudden this particular discussion around race and class and sexism and all these other isms, it got triggered in the heat of this televised event. All of a sudden, she's not my friend of 25 years anymore. All of a sudden, she's feeling like somebody that I need to distance from. But what's symbolic are the conversations that we haven't had over the years that are brought to a head in the course of this, of what's happening politically around us. And what I recognize is that the relationship hasn't been as authentic as it probably has needed to be. That in fact, when I really look at what's been happening, there's been many times where she might have said something that I just kind of ignored and didn't comment on. It's like, well, she's just doing what she does, and I'm a good Buddhist. I don't have to overreact. So I've kind of swept it under the rug, all under the umbrella of kindness, and then a situation like this comes up and I'm just pissed off, and we've got our own little mini war going on. But what's really happening is that we are both talking about what's been traumatic for us in this little disguise called the political arena. We're both in pain about what hasn't been acknowledged in our own lives and in generations of pain that we carry in our bones. And everybody walking has a story like this, a story of pain. And it just takes a little brush for us to remember or to be reactivated. And oftentimes we're not sure why. I'm on the plane flying across town. I have a partner in Charlotte, North Carolina, so we've been doing this long distance thing. And so I'm on the plane, and I'd been on this 7-week intense, just really, really busy. So I'm looking for this long distance flight to relax. and to finally get my chair back. And I always get an aisle seat, so I, you know, got all these control needs, right? So I finally get in my seat, and the light goes out, and you can let the chair back. So I let the chair back, and the guy that's behind me starts kicking the back of the seat and dropping the tray. I mean, I thought it was a child back, you know, back and forth. I mean, very, you know, it was really something. And so, you know, I was trying to act like it was just my own triggers, and, you know, so finally I turned around and I said, would you mind not, you know, putting the heels of your knees in the back of my chair and dropping the tray? And he screamed at me, saying, if you didn't let your seat back, this wouldn't be happening. And how dare you, you know, cramp my style, so to speak. Well, you can just imagine what was happening. Okay, so this is a white man. You know, race gets played. You know, this is part of how I'm hardwired. Race gets played. Here's this white man shouting at me, a black woman. Okay, so I'm triggered there. All of the people of color on the plane turn around as if to say, okay, are you going to represent? What are you going to do here? I know you're not going to let him talk to you like that, right? The brothers on the plane are going, I hope I don't have to get up, you know, and protect your honor, but maybe I shouldn't because you're a woman, and then you might think I'm stepping in your business. It's like, okay. And some of the white folks on the plane were shrinking and hoping it would all go away, and I hope it's not going to be any trouble. And of course, I'm making all of this up, right? So what did I do? What would you do? I pulled my seat back up. Now, that was after about, you know how you see the fast forward clips in a movie where everything rushes, your whole life rushes through you in a moment, and then you're left with what are you going to do, and, you know, what's the right thing to do in this situation? Because sometimes you pay attention to the behavior, and sometimes you want to pay attention to the need. So I'm 5 feet, so I figured, okay, it's not going to kill me if I let my seat up. I let my seat up. And I heard this very faint whisper, thank you. It was kind of, had a little spin on it, thank you. But it was a thank you. So everybody seemed to relax because I could feel it. Maybe it was just me. Sometimes I think we create it all, you know. So later, after I had taken a nap and I got up and I went to the back of the plane to go to the restroom, what I noticed when I looked behind me, he was 7 feet something. He must have been 7 feet tall. And he was really cramped into that space. And I almost chuckled because I saw the little boy part of him fighting because he had been tall all his life, and it had been, you know, it just hadn't been fair, and everybody takes, you know. And so I had this blink of compassion for him attempting to take care of himself, even though it wasn't delivered in the nicest way. But it was a moment, and every moment we have the opportunity to make those little small changes. I can honestly tell you that it hasn't always been that way. But by the time we're 12 years old, we've already decided how we're going to protect ourselves against what life offers. By the time we're 12, we've got our armor up. And this is rooted in early childhood traumas, and they don't have to be a particular event. Sometimes they're atmospheres of fear. So early childhood traumas oftentimes gives birth to rage. And the other thing that gives birth to rage is the unresolved rage of our parents and ancestors that gets passed on, that we carry out of an unconscious loyalty to them. And what I mean by that is whatever they didn't finish gets passed on. You watch the Olympics with the relay, and they had the baton, and everybody's racing, and then they pass it, and the next person runs with it. I think a lot of our emotional ways of being in the world, or our responses to deep traumas, is rooted in what we learned, what got passed on. And so each generation has an opportunity to transform this particular energy into something more useful. Now, my work blends both the Eastern and Western traditions as well as African shamanism. So in the African shamanism arena, the ancestors are alive and well, and they are oftentimes looking for us to live a dignified life, not a life where we're harming or hurting other people, but a life where we are resting well in our own skin. Because when that's not happening, whatever the dis-ease is, gets lived out and then passed on to the next generation. They get the baton and they're running with it from there on out. So there's a way that I'm defining rage in my work that I think is important, because it's not to be understood as some useless emotion. The way I talk about it is, rage is an oppressed child emotion housed deep in our bodies and bones. Rage is a descendant of our traumas, the twin of our shame, the burden of our denied histories, the foreign language of our emotional pain, and the wisdom that helps us heal. So I see rage as a natural resource of misused energy. It's an emotion that brings a lot of information with it, but because we've been kind of conditioned to not have a relationship with it, it's hard to get to know what it actually brings to the table of our lives. So we make this deal early on. And what I've found is that there's 6 disguises of rage that high-functioning people tend to wear. So I'm not talking about the people that are those terrorists or those countries or those races or whatever those others are. I'm talking about people like us and how we've been conditioned to walk in the world with our histories and herstories in a way that keep this rage somewhat under wraps. So I'm going to talk about these 6 disguises, and I want you to think about them in terms of which 2 you're most identify with. Now, the purpose of talking about disguises of rage is not so that you get in a little box, but more as a gateway to a deeper understanding about this very vibrant, mobilizing kind of energy that we carry in our bodies. So of the 6 disguises, they fit into 3 categories. We have fight types, flight types, and shrink types. And for the record, all of these disguises have a shadow, and they all have a wisdom. So if you feel like you're more than the 2, you're probably right. Because the reason there's 6 is because I'm all 6 of them. No, I'm only kidding. That's not what I really mean. Okay. So these are gateways, and these are forms of conditioning. They're not to be confused with who we are. They're what we do as a way of protecting ourselves. So the fight types are in the ring with rage in their lives, and it's what the Buddha might refer to more as wounded pride or aversion. We have the dominance disguise of rage, who is a person that is in high control of their lives and everybody else's if they can get away with it. When I talk about disguises of rage, I'm talking about life patterns, not just the thing you did this morning, but things you tend to do as a knee-jerk reaction in your life for the most part. So the dominance disguise of rage has a need to control their lives, because early on they were highly controlled. So they make sure they control the world to make sure they're never controlled again. That's the idea. The defiance disguise of rage is the defiance is the disguise that we most associate with rage. That's the person that could get upset, go into a high expression of rage, get in your face, might be hostile, belligerent, and confrontive. They live in a chronic state of being angry, even if it's just in their mind. They're just mad all the time. And this is not about whether it's good reason for it or not. We're talking about ways we've learned how to protect ourselves. And then there are flight disguises of rage. These are folks that are on the run from rage. And it's what the Buddha might describe as frustrated desire or a sense of clinging or attaching. There's a distraction disguise of rage as a person that feels every moment because there's an intolerance of stillness or quiet. There's a terror of it, actually. So when you get home, everything's turned on, the TV, the microwave with nothing in it, the radio, the internet's on, all these things are kind of going, and you're cooking, and, you know, you might be on the phone. Or this disguise is also about just the sense of consuming the world. So there's the acquiring, like the hungry ghosts, the certain insatiableness about this disguise that you can't get enough. So there's all the knowledge and the books and the degrees or this kind of thirsty searching away, kind of rushing to your meditation practice on a regular basis. So that's a flight type. And the other flight disguise of rage is a devotion disguise of rage. And that's the person that's in service to other people at the expense of their own well-being. So the service is not from a place of, you know, wanting to serve. There's oftentimes an unconscious agenda of hoping you're going to get something, but the pattern is that you never do, because you're not honest about the intention that you go into it with. And that's a life pattern. And a lot of times you'll see the devotion of the disguise of rage with people that were conditioned to be nice all the time. There's a certain socialization around it that we get hooked into, and we think that's who we are. But that's what we do because that's something that we had to do in order to be loved early on. And there are two shrink disguises of rage. These are people that play hide and seek with rage. It's kind of like a peekaboo game that happens. And the Buddha would maybe refer to this as a desire for oblivion or a thrust for non-existence, is some of the language I've found in the text. We have the dependence disguise of rage. This is the person that plays it small, never quite steps into their own ambition or their own areas of interest and creativity. Because what happened early on was a deal that they made early on was that they knew that if they got too separate and full of themselves, that they might not have the love and support that they need. So this is someone that might be in a state of distress a lot of the time. There's always some crisis. Sometimes people have to come and kind of help bail you out, and life is a big drama, and it's like that a lot. Sometimes we have that in our lives, but sometimes it's a pattern for other people. And it's a way to maintain connection and to guarantee that someone's going to be there. And the sixth disguise is depression disguise of rage. We oftentimes hear that depression is like the flip side of rage. But this is an interesting little spin on depression. It's not clinical depression that I'm talking about. I'm talking about a low-grade, kind of keeping the lid on, playing it behind the scenes, doing great things in the world, but don't want much light shed on who they are. Because if you get too much attention, then there's more expectations, and then you might disappoint somebody. And that's really what feels unbearable. The idea of disappointing somebody. And there's also the conflict of not being able to say no that's also present with both of these shrink disguises of rage. So it's an overextension, but an intolerance of being able to completely show up because bad things just might happen. So those are the six disguises: dominance, the need for high control, defiance, the person who could get in your face and be angry, distraction, the person that's moving around a lot, devotion, the one that's serving at her expense of his or her own well-being, dependence, the one that gives up on herself or himself in order to maintain love, depression, the person who hides out and hopes to be discovered and does not want to disappoint others. So I want you to turn to the person right next to you for 2.5 minutes and just talk about which two disguises you most identify with and what's your earliest memory of putting it on. 2.5 minutes. Okay. There's a little bit of excitement in the room. So these disguises of rage are ways we've learned how to protect ourselves. They're symbolic of what's forgotten, unfinished, and what's ungrieved. So there's work to be done to relieve ourselves of the weight. And what happens sometimes is we need to be able to look back in order to move forward. Because there is something that hasn't been honored yet in the legacy that we're still carrying in our bones and bodies, something we need to make peace with so that we're not so stimulated or re-triggered in the face of traumas. It's hard to be fully present to what is if the story is so hardwired in our bodies and bones. These are behaviors that were once adaptive, but now they're just simply habits. These disguises are like old movies. They just run and rerun and rerun. But the good news is that we can do some editing. And that's about being mindful and choosing and getting ourselves still enough to recognize that we can make a choice. Disguises constrict the heart and all matters of the heart. So I don't know about you, but I tend to share my rage with the people that are closest to me. And I mentioned that these disguises have a shadow and they also have a wisdom. You know, we marry the shadows or we get involved with them or we have them as children or parents, you know. But behind the disguises are longings. There's a part of us that's still looking for a resolve. Rage is attached to justice and compassion, those two kind of things together. So many people that are on a spiritual journey of enlightenment wonder, why is it that the healthier I feel like I'm getting in my process, my meditation process, the more angry I become? And that's because you're developing the internal wiring that you need to deal with the truth that rage makes available to us. But make no mistake, kindness is the medicine to put rage at rest, not only for ourselves, but also for our parents and ancestors. So I'd like for you to hear some of the longings that go with these disguises of rage, what they're really after. I mentioned earlier that we could pay attention to what people do, or we can pay attention to what the need is in this moment. So these statements are more about the need, what's being questioned and what these disguises are really struggling with in their lives. And we do this in a particular way that's going to require a little bit of orchestration with you, because most of the work that I do in sanghas is also try to have a component of connection among the sangha members. So bear with me as I invite you to engage each other and not just listen to me. So what I'd like for you to do is to just turn to someone right near you, face to face, and we're going to do this 6 times with 6 different people, but pick somebody that's right near you to just turn to. And I'll be ringing the bell, and each time we'll pick a different person. So face up with someone right quick, and then I'll tell you the next step. Okay? Just one person right now. One-on-one with one other person. Okay, let me have your attention. This is going to be a silent exercise, and then I'm going to ask you to say some things out loud while you're looking at the other person. So I need your attention, and when I ring the bell, it'll be time to, you know, you can make a gesture to just close the connection you have. That could be a bow or a hug or however you're feeling it. And then you're going to turn quickly to someone else right in your neighborhood, right where you are, and we'll go to the second round of questions. All right? So take a breath, and I want you to take a moment and just look at the person that you're partnered with. Take a look. All right. Just see who's there. And just notice your breath. And this is what the dominance disguise is trying to understand. How do I love without feeling like a fool? How do I stay connected with you when I am hurt and disappointed? How do I say I'm sorry and mean it? So say out loud to this person, I see that you have a lot of vision. Say that out loud. I see that you have a lot of vision. And you have a lot to give that is strong and wise. In fact, you're just like me. So make a gesture, get a hug or whatever, and get another partner right near you. Very quickly, move around. Okay. Take a breath. Just settle in and look at this beauty in front of you. And notice what's happening in your body. Let yourself relax with this. You're just looking. Non-judgment. Yeah. And this is what the distraction disguise of rage is trying to understand. That the distraction is a person that's on the run all of time. How do I do nothing without being consumed by fear? Who am I without my thoughts, my things, or my things to do? How do I allow myself to feel all that I embody? Now say to this person out loud, you are spontaneous and free. And you're just like me. I rely on your free will and your joy. Thank you. Get a gesture. Move to the next person. Do this very quickly. Okay, take a breath. You know, sometimes people join hands in this exercise, so if that feels right, go for it. If it doesn't, it's okay. It's all right to have a little connection, as long as it's not the knees in the back of the chair on the plane. We can do this. So take a breath and settle yourself and look into the face of this human being. And be mindful of just breathing and being present to this moment fully. This is good. And let yourself relax. Let the heart be open, the belly soft. And see the humanness that's there. And this is what the defiant disguise of rage is trying to understand. This is a person that is in a perpetual state of mental war. What they want to know is, how do I love without hurting you or myself? I'm afraid a lot of the time. What would happen if I didn't have to prove to you that I was right? What would it be like? How do I tell you when I'm hurting? I don't know how to do that. And how do I say I'm sorry and really mean it? And say to this person, your anger has been a source of protection for many of us. I know the intention behind the action. I see your heart. You know why? Because you're just like me. All right, get another partner. So take a breath again and look at this beauty. And as you're looking, imagine, what is it that we can affirm just in our looking that would strengthen each other? What can we affirm just in this exchange that would strengthen us? And this is what the devotion disguise of rage is trying to understand deep inside. This is the person that it gives so much. Oftentimes it's at the cost of her own or his own well-being. How do I love you without betraying myself? How do I not take responsibility for how you feel? How do I take care of myself without feeling selfish? How do I allow others to care for me? I'll say to your partner, I care for you. It's really true. Don't look at what I do sometimes. No, this is true. You got a heart, I got a heart. You know how I know? 'Cause you're just like me. All right, find a partner. Okay. So take a breath again and look at this jewel of a person in front of you. You know, we move so quickly in the world, we don't always notice just how beautiful we each are. You know, they talk about, well, slow down and smell the roses. Well, slow down and smell your neighbor. No. Gotta see who's there at least. So this is what the dependence disguise of rage is trying to understand. You know? Part of the question that they have is one around how do I want to be remembered? So what truth about myself should I trust more? What might I discover by giving myself what I need? What would it be like to have all the answers to my own questions? And say to your partner, you are the embodiment of origination. You know all about play. And I'd like to have fun with you. Maybe you can help me have more fun. Because after all, you're just like me. All right, get another partner. All right. Okay. Just take a breath. And once more, just really soak this person in. Take full advantage of looking at them through the eyes of your heart. Just take a moment to do that. It's okay. This is our Sangha. Yeah. We live for these kinds of connections. This is what the depression disguise of rage is trying to understand. Why have I chosen to live? Who am I if I let go of my despair? What can I create that speaks louder than words? And what do I love more than I fear? And say to your partner, you're just like me. You know about soulful solitude. You know the texture of the inward journey like no one else. I see you in me. I see me in you. Ah, you're just like me. Okay, get a hug. All right. Okay, return to your seats. You're welcome. There's a lot of discovery we can glean through playing with these disguises of rage and allowing them to kind of wake us up to what we already deeply know and to help us see the humanness in all beings. I've found that in working with this, you know, with people around these types, it allows them to have a bit more spaciousness around their worries and not be so hard on themselves. And when we can examine ourselves in that place of spaciousness, I think we can see more because we're not in such a constricted place. So Mark Nepo says in his book of Awakenings, dropping all that we have constructed as important allows us to be born again into the simplicity of spirit that arises from the unencumbered self. Where do we begin? How do we take down a wall that took years to erect? And we do it breath by breath. There's a lot of tools that I have in the book, and it certainly helps you walk through this. But I would have to say that the fundamental tool of transforming the negative energies of this vibrancy into positive fuel is when we can meditate and use Vipassana as the tool of creating that spaciousness so that we can self-examine. It is the medicine of our time. And it allows us to turn our attention inward, to stop over-identifying with our stories, because that's what these disguises are. They're kind of tight pockets of stories that we've over-identified with, and it becomes our life. And, we're so much more than that. We want to break our loyalty to this suffering because these disguises are forms of suffering. We want the energy of rage, but we want to drop the stories. Part of the practice is dropping the object of our agitation and focusing on our own pain. We don't realize when we're upset that we're actually in pain, because our attention is so outwardly focused on the thing that we're upset about. Sometimes that thing is ourselves. But we want to drop the story and see what the residence is that's happening in the body, that's actually holding, that we associate with that story, and unpack it. And we do that beautifully through Vipassana. So many of you have that advantage in your pocket of being able to allow yourself in your stillness practice to develop an intimate relationship with these disguises of rage so that you can hear what they're here to teach you about how you've been living your life. And a lot of what they have to say has to do with you being in a place of integrity in this body and in this life. Because anything we deny and oppress and try to act like it's not there or get mad because we get mad, anytime we do that, it just gets bigger. And then it pops out on the side. And again, we fall in love with them. Keep that one in mind. So breath by breath, we do this. And I talked about earlier that we want to work with these disguises of rage because they're rooted in early childhood kind of disappointments and traumas, but they're also rooted in the unresolved rage of our parents and our ancestors. And when their experiences are dignified, we find that we have a lot more relief and space in our bodies to live in. And we're not so reactive. So honoring the parents and the ancestors is crucial. Those of you that are upset with the parents, maybe don't even know the parents or ancestors, all of that is information that's important to address. This work we're going to be doing this weekend, this day and a half retreat, is looking at how to transform our rage inheritance. And we all have one. So it's what we kind of carry around with, and we're not aware that we're carrying it around, but again, it pops out and it actually wreaks havoc in our lives. So what we're going to be paying attention to are the pain patterns that we have, and a little bit is rooted in these disguises of rage. We're looking at the pain pattern and how to break the loyalty to it, so to speak. So we want to look at what that's about, why it's there, bow to it, because it needs a dignified acknowledgement, and then recommit ourselves to what we're here to do. So it's a ceremonial weekend around looking at this particular packing that we carry around that is actually creating a tremendous burden in our lives, a tremendous amount of suffering in our lives, and we don't recognize it. We don't quite see it, or we haven't quite looked at it that way. So this is an opportunity for that kind of exploration and discovery to happen in a kind way. We're not trying to eliminate rage. We're trying to have a relationship with it that allows us to live more honestly. So I just want to say that there's a prayer that I have around rage that I'd like to share with you in terms of my hope around this work and why I think it's important. And this and a lot of what I've talked about tonight is in the book, so you don't have to try to remember it if you don't like. But this is the dedication of the merit around this particular emotion that I'd like to share. May every one of us become more curious and less frightened of rage. May all forms of rage be acknowledged as pain and treated with the greatest compassion possible. May we look at one another's rage, recognize ourselves, and fall in love with what we see. May our dedication to inner peace open our hearts in ways that heal the roots of rage throughout the world for all beings. And may my life and your life and my practice and your practice be for the betterment of all beings. So I thank you for your attention and for playing with me around these disguises. Be well.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.